Hello and welcome to another edition of the End Zone Podcast. My name is Eric Jensen, joined today by my good friend, Brian Brown. Before we get too much into this, we are on a bit of a time crunch today. We're working through lunch breaks and schedules and a Frozen Four, and it's just a busy week here on the End Zone Podcast. Brian, I think it's safe to say a lot of shit happened over the weekend. I mean, a lot of stuff happened. And if we saved it all for one podcast, it'd probably go on for 2 hours. So we're going to hit the biggest portions here in this podcast that will drop Monday. Then this is Monday right now. We're recording this at about 6:09 p.m. Mountain Time. Once this is done around 6:49 Mountain Time, I'm going to get off, upload it, timestamp it, get it out for the people. Then I'm going to jump into a Zoom meeting with RK. Maybe hit anything we missed. Maybe talk a little bit free agency superlatives. But more likely than not, that will come at the beginning of next week's show. And we will do a deep dive on wide receivers that will drop on Wednesday. And of course, I'm sure we'll touch on wide receivers again before the draft to get Brian's thoughts. And then next week, hopefully, the Frozen Four will be out of our hair. And we will resume Wednesday and we'll just do our quarterback show for the draft and touch on maybe some superlatives. Brian did a really nice job of laying out some things on the rundown. With that, let's get into the shit that happened this weekend, Brian, which there was quite a bit of. If you had to pick, what was the biggest thing that happened this weekend? There's a lot.
For me, I think it's the Justin Fields trade, and the thing that triggered it, it seems more or less, is Kenny Pickett going and essentially requesting a trade from the Steelers and ending up with the Eagles. I did not see that chain of events coming, and maybe some of that's on me because we had talked about it on the podcast, and I'd convinced myself that Justin Fields was going to be with the Bears until likely midseason to pull the best value. And I still believe that his highest market value is going to be midseason next year sometime, or next season sometime, not in the current moment. But so the Bears, I guess, credit, they did right by him and traded him to a franchise that he was on board with. And, Kenny Pickett didn't want to be a backup, I guess, or didn't want to compete with Russell Wilson. Although I don't know if I'm a young quarterback, man, that seems like something that I'd be interested in doing, but what do I know?
Well, is it more Pickett or was it more the Steelers? I think that this was a move made by the Steelers that they clearly, like we talked about the last time we talked, I think they just had a different evaluation than I think maybe you thought they had, Brian. I think they realized that Kenny Pickett, it had been 2 years, he hadn't really shown much, and that it was time to move on. And I think they did well by trading him to the Eagles. Kenny Pickett is exactly where he belongs, which is being a backup. I guess you could say a high upside backup, although I don't even know how much I believe that. For the Eagles, that was dealt for about, I believe they got a fourth round pick back. Essentially, then they traded that pick for Justin Fields, who they traded for a sixth-round pick. But if Fields plays, that becomes a fourth-round pick. Overall, my thought here, Brian, is this. I think the Steelers, I've changed my tune on them since the last time we talked, because I think what they did was smart, and they did the Steelers thing, which was to be a well-run organization. And so now you go into next year with Russell Wilson and Justin Fields competing for your starting quarterback job, which, by the way, we haven't had an entertaining quarterback battle in the preseason for about 4 years now. I think, to me at least, this is the most entertaining one we've seen in a while.
Wilson sure seems excited about it, right?
Yeah, they roll out whoever they roll out week one. If it's Russ, it's Russ. If it's Justin Fields, it's Justin Fields. You go with that. If one doesn't work, you try out the other. But, man, I'm not going to be surprised if I'm sitting here in November with you and Mason and YB and the crew and saying, oh, look, the Steelers just won their seventh or eighth game in November. And we're talking about them being a contender for the playoffs again going down the stretch. I think they made moves to get better. I think it is stopgap. I think both of these couldn't pan out, but say both don't pan out, then you're just picking a quarterback next year. And that's not a terrible place to be if you're the Steelers, who have still a pretty complete roster, even though they've dealt Deontay Johnson. All they really have to do now is draft some offensive line help, continue to draft what they do best, which is wide receivers in the late rounds, which, as we know, this draft is full of. Arthur Smith is a big question mark, and I'm never going to be fully sold on the Steelers because Arthur Smith's involved. But
why is,
I see the vision, and I think they did pretty good for the cards they were dealt.
Can I ask why you think Arthur Smith's a question mark? Is it just because of how things went with the Falcons?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, he did have those years with Tannehill. Sure, you can say that, but he also had Derrick Henry, and prime Derrick Henry is not the same as Jalen Warren and Najee Harris. And he couldn't find a way to make Bijan Robinson fit into his offense. I think that's kind of a condemnation on him. But I understand the argument that being a coordinator could be a nice sea change for him, and he could totally bounce back. I'm not totally against that take. I just will have some healthy skepticism, let's just say that, around the Pittsburgh Steelers. Right now, if you were to put a gun to my head and say, what record do the Pittsburgh Steelers have? I would say they're somewhere between 8 and 11 wins, probably. And I think if you were to tell most Steelers fans that, they'd be perfectly happy with it. They want to win in the playoffs, of course, but I think if you're an 11-win team, you have a shot to win that first playoff game. But and I thought overall the Steelers did really well, and it's smart. They didn't give up much, and I think Fields is unfairly maligned. I don't really understand the hate. I kind of wish the Broncos would have made this move to just take a shot at him. I mean, you can pick up his fifth-year option, and he can still remain pretty cheap for you. Like, or you can just let him play out his rookie deal and see what happens. I mean, I don't understand why the Raiders or Broncos didn't make this move, because I feel like he would have been a much better starter than Gardner Minshew or Jared Stidham. So I feel like the Steelers made a smart move, and I feel like Ryan Poles got fleeced. He got caught trying to take care of Justin Fields too much. Apparently there were four teams and Fields vetoed three, and the Bears did right by him, which I guess that's shout out to the Bears, but yeah, you never know. We can get to the Bears moves in just a second. But that's about all I have on the Steelers, Brian. And then we can move on. I don't want to go too long because I know we're trying to keep this one tight.
We're good. We're good, man. I don't think there's much else to be said other than it's clear that Mike Tomlin is not here. Mike Tomlin stands on business, and his business is not waiting around for quarterbacks to get with the program.
Yep. The Bears made moves this weekend. The Bears have really made moves all throughout free agency. They've been one of the more active teams, but they go out and they trade for Keenan Allen, which the signals kind of the end of the era for the Chargers, who are now without Keenan Allen and Mike Williams. The Bears get him for a fourth round pick, pretty solid value there. Allen had a career season last year. He does have some injury concerns, but he's a solid weapon to have. And you kind of look at that team, and suddenly they have DJ Moore and Keenan Allen and, you know, Dante Pettis or whoever you want to run out of a slot. And it's like, well, if they do draft Caleb Williams with the number one overall pick, which seems like the biggest lock in the world at this point, at least he's going to have some weapons to throw to. I'm of the opinion it's probably not going to work out simply because of the organization it is, but I think they did the best they could to set up Caleb Williams for success in year one. I feel like it was a good move, and they did what they could. They only have four draft picks now, so I think it's likely they trade back from nine. But they went out and they got him a proven NFL wide receiver, a star in Keenan Allen, and they've got DJ Moore on the roster. They upgraded the offensive line a little bit. They added Ryan Bates, who was pretty good for the Bills these past few years. Feel like the Bears made the move they had to, and it sets up well for Caleb Williams. The number one overall pick doesn't always go into a great situation, but I feel like this is a pretty solid situation Caleb Williams is going to find himself in,
Yeah,
even if I'm a little bit skeptical of all the hype around him.
I think it's what you've done is you've tried your best to get as much talent as you can in a short amount of time, right? We talked about it previously on the pod that if you're really going to break down and rebuild this whole thing as the Bears, I think the more talent acquisition pro scenario is to trade that number one overall pick. Now I heard on local radio somebody mentioned that the Bears should trade the number one overall pick and Fields and just collect as many draft picks and assets as possible. And that's, I think if you're hitting overall the reset button, then that's maybe an option. I think that's a little extreme, but that would get you a nasty haul of assets. But just to your point, like they did a good job of reloading and the thought process makes sense, right? Whether or not it works out, it makes sense to go get a veteran wide receiver in Keenan Allen, who's been proven to be a great locker room guy, who I think has some good culture behind him. And, he's going to be hungry to do something in Chicago. So that all makes sense to me. But I'm with you, man. I just don't see the flip happening soon enough. And you mentioned the number nine pick. I think my one curiosity, and I'll ask you this as the armchair GM. Well, I guess you're not armchair. It's more bedside GM,
Bedside.
desk, bedside GM, bedside
Bedside
GM.
GM.
Yeah. Would you trade that number nine pick or would you go after Joe Alt, knowing that he's probably going to be a 10 to 15 year starter at the position?
I don't have. Here's where my blind spot is these days. I need to pull up the draft order on Tankathon. Don't the Titans pick before them?
I think you might be right on that one, and I probably should have
I'm
that order
pretty
up
sure
too.
the tight. If there's one pick, I'm pretty sure I'm locked in on at this point. But I think a team's gonna take. I do think the Titans and Joel Alt are pretty locked in right now. So I don't think he'd be there at nine. I know there are some other good tackles. They took a tackle last year. Like I think it's way, 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 way too early to give up on their offensive line.
The tackle they took from Tennessee is a right tackle though, and so that's the
Yeah.
difference. Braxton Jones, who started for them last year, local kid, played at Murray High School, then played at SUU. I think he's a very capable player. But my philosophy, my theory with tackles is if you're a decent starting left tackle, you'll be an excellent starting left guard. And I'm some people may disagree with that, but my thinking is that if you have the opportunity, and maybe this is what the discussion is it say that Joe Alt does fall into their laps, right? Maybe someone trades with the Titans so the Titans can go get Marvin Harrison Jr. Because if you've got Marvin Harrison Jr. and Will Levis and Calvin Ridley, now all of a sudden they're cooking with peanut oil down there in Tennessee or whatever they cook with grease, whatever they cook with. I'm sure they cook with some sort of oil because the fried chicken's amazing. But I think that's always the curiosity I have is how valuable are those first round picks really? Because we see teams get a haul for them, and maybe they're not as valuable as we all think they are. Unless you're drafting a quarterback and you know that it's going to be a Caleb Williams type thing, which I watched some highlights again, and I just need to apologize to anyone that I might have tried to mislead by saying that Caleb Williams isn't going to be a 15-year starter in the NFL because he's going to be. I just don't know that he's going to be Patrick Mahomes, but the talent is worth investigating and finding that out.
Yeah, I think taking a tackle at nine could work, but they just have Bears fans will tell you the defense is excellent because they have Matt Eberflus and they played well down the stretch. I still think they have holes up front that they need to fill in. They don't really, outside of Montez Sweat and DeMarcus Walker, they don't really have proven pass rushers or interior defensive linemen right now. And I mean, I think the secondary's fine with Jalen Johnson, but Jalen Johnson, I know we are both fans of him at Utah, but he's an above average NFL corner. He's not nothing to like
Yeah, you can
not
always add
upgrade
talent.
over.
Yeah, you
Yeah,
can add talent to that
he's
secondary, no
nothing to
problem.
not upgrade over. Like if one of the corners is there at nine and you really want to take him because you know they that'd be solid. Now
Draft
I
order
think.
I have has Tennessee 7, Atlanta 8, and Chicago at 9, just FYI. So you might be right about Joelle.
I just don't think Joel's going to be there. If he falls there, yeah, I think you're right. I think taking a left tackle is a good strategy with a quarterback. But you know, I look at the offense right now, and you know, it once they draft Caleb Williams, which they will, it'll be Caleb Williams, DeAndre Swift, DJ Moore, Keenan Allen, Tyler Scott, Cole Kmet, and Khalil Herbert splitting touches with DeAndre Swift. That's not a bad offense. That's a pretty formidable offense right off the bat. I do think they could upgrade at that left tackle spot. I agree with that. But I think where they need to focus in the draft after quarterback is defense because they have some players and you can believe that your coach raises the tides of those players. I don't. I still don't buy Matt Eberflus as a coach, really. But
I need more. I need more. I need to see more of him being consistent throughout the course of a season. Because and winning games, they got to win some games, man. Like
yeah.
that's the end of the day. That's what it's all about.
But the roster looks more serviceable than it did last year, so I
Yeah.
feel like. They've done a good job and trading back from nine is going to get you at least, you know, 2 or 3 second round picks that you can kind of build with and move around and get some more guys on day two and day three. And if we do believe this is a deep draft class as far as offensive playmakers and offensive tackles, there could still be a guy there on day two, Brian. You know, they're going to have a high second round pick if they move that nine. So,
The question becomes then is who wants to get up to nine to try and get that pick, right?
Yeah,
Because that's
it'll be interesting to see how that falls, but I don't think we're quite at that point in the off season yet, but I'm sure we will discuss that in the coming weeks. Not to shut you down, just to move to our next point here before we gotta head out. Aaron Donald retired. That's worth mentioning. I didn't put that on here, but I mean, just a brief moment. He is very clearly the best defensive player of the generation. And like I'm a big football historian. I believe in going back and studying like the greats of past generations. Tell me if it's blasphemous, Brian, because I not to say you were alive for his reign, but I would put him in the same conversation as Lawrence Taylor. As far as prime guys that had just a game-wrecking effect. Like, if you watch Lawrence Taylor's highlights and Aaron Donald's side by side, to me, they're in the same tier.
Yeah, I think it's close. I think the difference with LT was just he was so maniacal and so ahead of the curve athletically and just in terms of instincts, football instincts, that he was a different cut of football player overall. I think Reggie White comes to mind in terms of comparisons and the level of play and ability that you could get out of a player. But I thought it was. The best way I can sum up Aaron Donald is Ted Wynn posted a highlight of him, said it was his favorite Aaron Donald highlight. And the long and the short of it is that at the snap of the ball, Aaron Donald's at a defensive end position. By the end of it, he has five offensive linemen surrounding him like he's in a cage, trying to contain and block him. and he's still getting pressure on the quarterback. So anybody who sometimes takes 4 to 5 guys to block is a lifetime level talent. You know, we can say once in a generation, but I don't think I'll ever see a player like Aaron Donald, because he was typically considered to be undersized, and he did more with that size than any player that I can remember in a long, long time. But sad to see him go, because I think he is just such a terror, and that's fun to watch players that just are so unstoppable. But, you know, 10 years in the league, man, and he's going to get out with his health and a lot of money and a Super Bowl ring. So good for him.
Yeah, he did an excellent job. He had a great career. An easy first ballot Hall of Famer. He is one of the players of this generation, and a guy that, Brian, for me, I know you're already there, buddy, not to take an age shot, but a guy to me that makes me feel old. I have, but right now, here, it's torn a little. I'm just going to turn this just for you. This is the Aaron Donald Sports Illustrated from the day he was drafted. It is torn. I have it put up on my wall. I have been watching the entirety of Aaron Donald's NFL career. He, I believe, came in the same draft class as, I'm not sure, but 2016. And that's right about, honestly, when this podcast started. So he is like one of the first players that has survived the entire lifespan of the End Zone podcast, which is kind of crazy.
Aaron Donald outlived Sports Illustrated. That's something else too. That's pretty,
yeah,
pretty phenomenal.
He's certainly, he and Russell Wilson. When Russell Wilson retires, I will also feel very, very old, because Russell Wilson was drafted the year I started watching NFL football. So both those guys have special chronological markers in my heart. All right, I wanted to check in on some tackle news. The Jets get panned for a lot of stuff, Brian. They do. They get thrown under the bus. They get laughed at. Sure, Aaron Rodgers probably a bad guy, conspiracy theorist. You don't know if he's actually going to be any good coming off a torn Achilles. They still don't really have a backup plan at quarterback. But one of their biggest issues, not only for the Aaron Rodgers era so far, but for the Zach Wilson era and the era before that, is they have just had a really hard time with their tackles. They tried with Mekhi Becton. He just didn't pan out. He wasn't the guy. So they go out, they trade for Morgan Moses, and then they sign Tyron Smith. And suddenly, you look and you do say that, outside of the fact that Joe Douglas didn't sign a backup plan for Aaron Rodgers and put so much blind faith in Zach Wilson, he has done a pretty damn good job of putting together a Jets roster that basically had nothing a few years ago. And now it allows them, if they want, to use that high draft pick at 10 to take a wide receiver and add to their firepower while they still have Rodgers under contract. It's smart moves and really well-run organization moves from the Jets. Who knows if it works out for the Jets? I doubt it does, but at least we're trying, and I feel like you really can't pan this move. They did a good job.
I don't know if you remember, but we talked about this back in October, and I kind of chided Joe Douglas a little bit for not doing a better job of building the offensive line room last year. And then you and I went back through it and realized, like, he did kind of the same thing last year as well. Loaded up on Dwayne Brown, some older anchor type NFL offensive linemen. And the hard part about it last year was the bottom just fell out because everybody got injured.
Yep.
And that's really why they sucked so bad up front, was just, and it wasn't just one injury. It was like 7. and a bunch of season enders and really attack their depth. So I don't know that you can change course if you're Joe Douglas. And so him kind of going back to the same standard of hoping, okay, if we got 1 to 2 more years of Tyron Smith that we can milk out of that, that'll be good. The Cowboys didn't, and you know, credit to him for attacking kind of a a wounded animal in the Dallas Cowboys, because they're so capped out right now, there was nothing they could do to protect themselves, right? And so I think that looking into the nuance and the savvy of the moves, I really like that. It again, I'm with you. I just don't think it's going to work out for the Jets ever. And so that being said, I feel bad because Joe Douglas is going to carry the burden of it when it inevitably doesn't work out. But if it does, I mean, give that man NFL GM of the year, because he's really scraped together some good moves with a team that, I mean, they still have an absolute load of depth on the defensive line. Now the offensive line looks better. I think you've got some playmakers. You've got Garrett Wilson still on a rookie contract. He should be hungry and much better next year. And of course, if Aaron Rodgers returns to his prior form, that instantly makes them a much better contender in the AFC. I don't know that I'm picking them to go to the Super Bowl, but they should be good, right? I mean, that's still a really young, hungry defense. And you have one of the best corners in the NFL in Sauce Gardner, and he's only going to be in his third year. So you can't feel that old, Eric.
Yeah, I guess I can't feel that old. All right. I feel like that covers all the big news. We did get some big wide receiver moves. We're going to talk about wide receivers in a second. So let's just finish up with some wide receiver talk overall. Hollywood Brown signs with the Chiefs. I want to know how you feel about this, Brian, because I've watched a lot of Hollywood Brown over his career. And I have certain thoughts about this move, but how do you, what's your instant reaction to the Chiefs signing Hollywood Brown? It's not a huge deal. It's something they can get out of pretty easily, but they bring in a wide receiver.
Is Hollywood Brown going to be any better than Marquise Valdez-Scantling and Kadarius Toney? I don't know. But it seems like the Chiefs are very almost obsessed with finding these reclamation projects at wide receiver in a league where you very, very rarely find reclamation projects that are successful at the wide receiver position. And that's the luxury of having Patrick Mahomes, obviously. If I'm the Chiefs, it's going to be all about draft and development for me, right? I think you've got a winner in Rashee Rice. He's not a deep threat, but that's the hope, is that you can hit Hollywood Brown 1 or 2 times a game. I think everybody, I don't think it's a secret at all that the Chiefs are targeting Xavier Worthy as far as the draft goes. And so to me, that's a better pickup than Hollywood Brown. We'll see. I mean, he's played with a really good quarterback in Lamar Jackson. Didn't do a ton with the Ravens. Then he went to Phoenix. Didn't do a ton with Kyler Murray. So if it's a question of, you know, and maybe that deal is structured so that he realizes that this is his last chance in the NFL, and he really comes through. He was such an electric player at Oklahoma, but I just wonder if the mindset was ever there with him. And so you have to hope that your culture, your quarterback, and everything else sinks in to make him a great player. And, you know, Lewis Riddick said something the other day about how culture fit and the people around you make such a difference in the NFL. And maybe that's what Hollywood Brown needs. Maybe he needs that Oklahoma Sooner type environment where he feels like he is the big dog or the top dog in the league. And that will start to bring out the player that we all thought he could be in the NFL. But right now, I'm always very cautious with any player that gets kind of tossed aside by a team like the Ravens. And so the fact that it got so much attention and news is a little bit puzzling to me. But I also think it's a sign of the times that people are just so reactionary, like, oh, Hollywood Brown, jeez, they're going to win another Super Bowl. I mean, they're probably going to win another Super Bowl regardless, you know, because that defense is still really nasty. Chris Jones is still the best defensive tackle in the league, in my opinion, and they still have Patrick Mahomes. So give it a shot. If it doesn't work out, like you said, it's easy to get out of.
Yeah, I got some reaction from my reasonable Chiefs fan friend Travis, who said ultimately it's a good deal that they can basically get out of after year one if they really want to. And
Travis.
Yes, he also just doesn't have much of a drop problem, which most of a wide receiving core did. And you imagine if you can catch passes, that's a pretty big upgrade on what they've got. I'm not a huge fan either, but it's the Chiefs. And Rashee Harris is going to take a step forward next year. And Hollywood Brown will probably get something from it, and then they'll draft Ladd McConkey, and it'll be like, oh, Jesus, how did this happen? They're scoring 30 points again. So, yeah, that feels like the place this is going, but I guess a decent move by them. Then Calvin Ridley signed a massive deal worth almost $100 million with the Titans, and I guess my question is, what exactly are the Titans doing? I don't really understand the plan. They spent a ton of money on Tony Pollard to move on from Derrick Henry. Then guess what happened? I mean, they ended up setting up, like, you know, they brought in Chidobe Awuzie. Like, he got benched by the Bengals down the stretch last year. It just seems like they're making all these moves thinking that they can kind of rebuild on the fly here when it's clearly a roster that just needs to be completely turned over. I'm not a fan of Rand Carthon as a GM. I think they made the wrong move by pushing Mike Vrabel out. I don't know, Brian. I personally, I'm not going to be high on the Titans. I'm picking them to finish dead last. I heard somebody say, you know, this podcast was formerly hosted by Trey Watkins, a great Titans writer who it's hyping him up online, but he's hyping up Calvin Ridley, DeAndre Hopkins, and Treylon Burks. Treylon Burks did nothing last year and looked like he regressed from his first year, didn't really take a step forward at all. DeAndre Hopkins was wildly inconsistent, no matter who the quarterback was. And Calvin Ridley just came off a year where you thought he'd be the missing piece in Jacksonville, but after a hot September, he just kind of faded away entirely from the offense down the stretch. I don't understand what the Titans are doing. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I am not going to be the person that hypes them up or says they've done a good job this offseason, because I think they would have been much better served to just save their cap space and address some of this stuff in the draft. So I don't understand what's going on in that regard, but it's like, what are we doing here giving Calvin Ridley $100 million? These wide receiver contracts these days are crazy. Why like, we talk about this running back bubble that we had, and I guess it came around because running backs got paid this time around, but like, what are we talking about? If we're going to admit that we have five wide receivers that are first-round wide receivers at minimum every single year now, which we have for the past 5 years, and we're admitting that the wide receiving classes just keep getting deeper and deeper every year, why are teams paying $100 million to Calvin Ridley? It doesn't make any sense. Just spend those draft picks on rookies, and it's just going to be a much smarter way to construct your team. It doesn't make any sense to me, Brian. And that is my thought on wide receiver, and that closes up every thought I have about this weekend. We did this good. We did this in about 40 minutes. It was solid.
Yeah, we'll take it. I just, one last thing on the Calvin Ridley stuff. You know, $50 million guaranteed is pretty good for a guy who can't do math in terms of how old he actually is. Did you see those comments?
No.
He tried to tell the media that he's 25, even though he's 29, because he missed 2 years.
Oh. Okay.
So, yeah, you know, maybe that's what was going on with the math, is that they're paying him for the extra 2 years that he missed. But yeah, I'm with you, man. The whole Tennessee situation is just smile and nod. Smile and nod.
All right. With that, we'll get out of here. Before we go, we're going to touch on wide receivers with you at some point. But who's a guy that you want me and Ryan to really go off on? Who's a guy that you have an outspoken opinion on right now that you're really feeling?
Well, you mentioned Ladd McConkey, and I've been a Ladd McConkey fan. I'm really curious to see what happens. I texted you the name of a UAB wide receiver. Do you remember what the name was?
I will get to it. I'm pulling up the text right now. I just watched Troy Franklin highlights before I got to this because he was the one guy I hadn't watched on the list. But then I need to watch this guy before I podcast with Ryan in about half an hour here. It's going to be, what was his name? You did send it yesterday. Tewan Palmer? Is that how I
There it is,
it?
Tejuan Palmer.
Tell me a little bit about Tijuan Palmer. What should I be expecting?
JUCO guy, highly explosive, played in a great offense under Trent Dilfer, and I think he's going to be a very intriguing under-the-radar late-round draft pick that a lot of teams are going to be regretting passing on just because he's going to be a great scheme fit for a lot of different teams. And like I said, a very, very plus athlete.
All right. With that, we'll call it a night, Brian. Thank you very much for the time and the beautiful words. Look out, Wednesday, wide receiver, deep down breakdowns. We will be doing that. Until then, we will see you next time. Peace out.